The Hand of Robin Squires, Chapter 18. For 5 days I waited and watched, trying to think of some way to get hold of the key. Then one night, as I started to go on my rounds of the slaves, I remembered I was down to my last jar of salve, and it was half empty. I decided to fetch another from the dispensary before leaving the ship. The dispensary was below deck, just at the bottom of a dimly lit companionway. I climbed down warily. I had twisted my ankle on the bottom step one day, and that had taught me to be careful. Had I come charging down the stairs at full speed in my old style, I might never have discovered a way of getting Billy Bowles' key. Partway down the steps, I realized the door was ajar. Billy Bowles and Powderlegs were talking quietly inside. I flattened myself against the wall, straining to hear. "That young fella's been coming in here nights," I heard Powderlegs say, "askin' for salve. I believe he's been fixin' up them slaves." Billy Bowles grunted. "He's meddlin', always meddlin'. The captain should have left that whelp back where he was. He's nothin' but trouble." They were talking about me. I inched as near to the door as I could without being seen. I was so close I could hear Powderlegs set down a bottle after he had taken a drink. Both he and Billy Bowles were obviously well into the rum. When he spoke, Powderleg slurred his words together as he had the day he had told me about Vigo Bay. "He ain't so bad. Just got a kind heart, he has. You have to admit, Billy, them slaves is a miserable lot. Can't stand the sight of 'em myself. A bit of salve on them wounds won't hurt. Now will it?" "You don't know nothing about it," Billy growled in return, his voice becoming more heavy and coarse with drink. "You got to treat 'em rough, else they won't work. Just lay down on the job. Whipped that savage real good a while back 'cause he wouldn't move. Afterwards, he work real good." Though I could not see him, I knew Billy Bowles' mouth was shaped into a cruel grin as he remembered how he had beaten Acton into submission. There was a long interval of silent drinking, and then Billy Bowles' ominous voice again. "You know, I've been thinking," he said. "We may have to get tough with the captain afore we're through." Now, the captain's a reasonable man. He ain't made no mistakes yet. Not with us watching him, he ain't. He knows we keep a close eye on him. We's on to him. Soon as we leaves this island, he's going to dump them slaves overboard. Course, they's a scurvy lot anyway. Alf starved with halfin' rations cut back so far. They'll be no good for nothing by the times we're done. We know is his plan for the crew, too. Soon as he gets the ship close enough to Boston, it'll explode and scuttle the whole works. The three of us'll get to shore, but the crew'll go down in the night and never know what happened. Now I says a man who does that to his crew is not to be trusted. We got to keep an eye on him." The stark horror of Billy Bowles' statement chilled me to the bone. I had already decided that my uncle had no intention of freeing the slaves who survived the summer, but it had never occurred to me that he would throw them overboard in cold blood. And certainly it had never occurred to me that he would plan to kill his crew. Was I also included in his plans? Would he make sure I went down with the scuttled ship? I did not want to believe that Edward would murder his own brother's son, but I could not deny the facts. I not only knew about the treasure, I knew about the floodgate and how to use the pump so that I was more dangerous to him than his crew. The sudden horrifying realization that my life too was probably in jeopardy filled me with such terror that my knees began to shake and I had to crouch down to keep from toppling over and giving myself away. I heard Powderlegs speak. "All I know is the captain's been good to me. Saved me life, he did, and a man can't do more than that now, can he?" Billy Bowles did not answer. His mind was still on his own survival. It was clear that he feared my uncle. Although his brain was dulled by the rum, he suspected he was tolerated only to do Edward's dirty work for him and because the Queen's privateer could not be sailed single-handedly. He had begun to fear that once the treasure was in the ground and they had left the island, my uncle would get rid of him, too. Obviously, Billy Bowles was trying to win Powderlegs over to share his distrust of my uncle, but the monkey, cripple that he was too clever for that. His survival depended on a man stronger than himself, and in any struggle between my uncle and Billy Bowles, my uncle was sure to win. Most of the time, he balanced himself between the first mate and the captain, but he left no doubt which man he would choose if it ever came to making a choice. Sensing this, Billy Bowles changed the subject. "One thing sure, that young whelps has got to go. I'll do it myself one of these days." "Now, Billy, don't be too hasty," Powderlegs said. "No need to be hasty. The captain has plans for the boy. He has to man the pump." "Pump or not, I ain't cutting in for that whelp. Too smart he is. I got plans for him, I have." With the awful picture of Billy Bowles looming over me, terror gripped me so tightly I felt lightheaded and faint. To this day, I do not know how I managed to remain outside that door when my impulse was to bolt up the stairs, plunge into the water, and swim far, far away. Such was my panic at this moment, but I knew my survival depended on outthinking my uncle. As I crouched against the wall, as much for support as for stealth, I began making a plan of my own. I would leave the island tonight. While Billy Bowles was sleeping, I would somehow sneak the master key off his belt, free Actodin, and escape with him to his people. Suddenly there was a scrape of boots across the dispensary floor. For one panic-stricken moment, I thought Billy Bowles was heading for the door, but then I heard the sound of the sea chest being opened and knew that he was after more rum. The sound of a bottle being opened confirmed it. Good. My plan was more likely to be successful if Billy Bowles and Powderlegs were both thoroughly drunk. With them in a stupor, I stood a much better chance of getting the key off the first mate's belt without waking him. But it would take hours of drinking for them to reach this state. I could not stay that long in the companionway. I would have to go back to my cabin. I got to my feet, and putting my full weight on the rail, I managed to climb the stairs without them squeaking and crept across deck down to my cabin. The first thing I did was to stuff my pockets with raisins and a chunk of stale bread to sustain Actodin and myself on our flight. Then I stretched out on my bunk to wait. I was too excited and scared to sleep, but I knew I must at least try to rest. Actodin's village was far away. There would be miles of wilderness to cross, and we would have to travel quickly to put a long distance between ourselves and my uncle before daybreak alerted him to our escape. So I lay in my bunk, concentrating on the sounds of the Queen's privateer, trying desperately to stay calm. The ship was never quiet. It rose and fell, sighing with each swell, and there was always the intermittent creaking of its wooden bones. Except for these sounds, there was silence. The crew had long since fallen asleep. At last, when the moon was directly over the ship, I stepped out into the narrow passage and, groping my way carefully to avoid tripping over unforeseen or unseen objects, made my way back to the dispensary. The door was still ajar, but there were no voices. Powderlegs and Billy Bowles were both asleep. I slipped past the door and into the room. There were about 2 inches of candle still burning. Billy Bowles lay on his back, spread-eagled across the upper bunk, and Powderlegs lay in the other. Both men were in a deep slumber. Billy Bowles, snoring, his mouth agape, looked fierce even in sleep. As I approached him, one slow, cautious step at a time, I had the awful premonition that his eyes would suddenly open and he would leap up and seize me. Even the dead so terrify us. My hands shook as I undid his belt buckle and slid off the wire loop. Once the master key was in my hand, I had to restrain myself to keep from dashing out the door. I forced myself to move slowly and carefully. Leaving the buckle open, I slipped back through the door and up the companionway to the deck. It was only after I had crossed the wharf platforms to the shore that I broke into a frenzied run. Acton was asleep, but as soon as I touched his ankle lock with the key, his eyes opened. He did not move right away. It took him a few moments to realize that I was actually unlocking the manacle. The iron band snapped open. "You're free," I whispered. "You can go back to your people now, but we must hurry." Octodon's face broke into a smile, the first I had seen since my uncle took him prisoner. He staggered to his feet. After the heavy ankle chain he had been dragging around for weeks, his leg felt weak and feather light. "You come," he said, as he cautiously swung his leg back and forth. "Yes, I come, but we must hurry," I repeated urgently. "We must get as far away as possible before sunrise." The moon was high and bright. I guessed it to be about midnight. If we were lucky, we had nearly 6 hours before the crew stirred. Some of the slaves, chained in the clearing, were awakened by our whispers. They began to move about restlessly, their manacles clinking. In that moment, I knew that before I could escape, I must also free the slaves. With any luck, maybe some of them would get off the island. Intoxicated by the power of one small key, I unlocked the ankle chain of the slave nearest Octodon. "Go," I whispered, pointing to the mainland. "Go." As he stumbled away, I went to the next, unlocking his manacle, and repeated the same directions. I got no further than the fifth lock when I heard Billy Bowles' savage roar behind me and knew that I was doomed. The last thing I saw was Octodon's figure disappearing into the bushes as a terrible pain split my head and I fell into blackness. The end of chapter 18.